Chapter 13. Clemson's thorough knowledge of the palace served him well. He led the royals down one of the narrow back servant staircases. To bypass the bustling kitchens, however, he took the broad corridor past the public meeting rooms, which typically stood quiet in the evenings, disturbed only by ticking clocks or the inaudible songs of the water nymphs painted on their ceilings. Matwick's secretary was just backing out of an administrative chamber, his arms filled with ledger books. Clemson opened the nearest door, pushed the royals inside and followed them himself, hand on his sword hilt, peering through the door crack. His shields kept on walking steadily. Quick-witted Kinley managed to chuckle as if her companion Dariush had just told her a joke. Heathclaw concentrated on juggling his burden and getting the door to lock with a bulky key. He had not seen the royals, and he paid no attention to Queen's shields nonchalantly striding down the hallway. When the man disappeared, Clemson led his party into the great ballroom, so empty tonight that their own reflections in the mirrored walls kept catching his eye, and their footsteps echoed hollowly. In the corner, painted over so as to be almost unnoticeable, stood the wooden door used by footmen to fetch firewood. Clemson had a master key. The stables lay to the west of the residence. The small group walked quickly, turned a corner of the building, and collided with a palace soldier pacing his rounds. Dariush pulled his dagger and poked the man in the side, while Yaneth grabbed his opposite arm in a vice grip. "Shh," whispered Dariush with a wicked smile. They dragged the shocked man between them. Clemson experienced a stab of fear when he spotted no horses in the yard, but soon discovered that the stableman and his helpers held them out of sight, saddled and ready, in the capacious central aisle of the stable. About half of his troop had already gathered, and the others arrived swiftly in clusters of two or three. Some of the men and women had brought belongings, all had their weapons. Yaneth tied his captive up tightly, gagged him so he couldn't call out, and locked him in a horse stall. Clemson helped the queen and the princella mount. His liege whispered to him about the extreme need for haste. He counted heads. One was missing.
"Don't wait for Gathley. He won't be joining us," Bristle said in an undertone.
Clemson experienced a shock. He shook it off.
"Bristle and Dariush," the captain called. "Shed your armour and ride leisurely to the arrival gate. Get the palace guards to open it for you. We will walk the horses until we are away from the buildings and then follow you. Your job is to get the gate open."
Bristle pursed his lips. He took a flask of liquor out of a saddlebag, took a swig and offered some to Dariush. Next, he deliberately spilled some on his clothing. They rode off, talking in rowdy voices about taverns and tavern wenches. Handing Night Mist's reins to one shield and Smoke's to another, the captain led the way, pulling his horse out of the yard. The temperature was just cold enough for their breath to condense in white clouds. Clemson turned around and saluted the stableman. The horses kept remarkably quiet, none nickered or whinnied. He waited until they reached the winter brown grass a ways from the palace, where movement would be more muffled than in the flagstone courtyard. Then he passed the whisper to mount up. He pulled his horse alongside Her Majesty.
"Where are we headed?" he asked.
"The key."
Clemson checked behind him. Shields Sina and Pontol flanked the Princella. He kept the pace slow, heading to the left of a rival avenue. When they were close enough, he halted them in the deeper shadows of the ancient elms that lined it. From what he could overhear, Bristle had encountered difficulty. His sergeant's voice grew strident.
"Come on, you fucking jackasses! Mimi may have leave! There's ladies waiting for us!"
They couldn't hear the guard's reply. Clemson counted 14 on duty tonight, more than the normal contingent. and he noticed they all had horses picketed at the gatehouse. He looked back at the palace. Several torches flitted back and forth through the royal wing, so there was no time to circle around to the kitchen gate.
"Since when, you pig fuckers?"
complained Bristle. Another answer they couldn't make out.
"Well then, fetch your squad leader off his lard arse and get him to authorise it."
A guard passed through the arched door of the gate tower and came back with an officer. At this distance, even though numerous torches lit the gate area, Clemson could not be sure, but he thought the officer might be Lurgan, one of General Jurgen's sons. Bristle started a heated argument with Lurgan, but clearly Lurgan wasn't going to yield, no matter how much Bristle cursed. Clemson made a snap decision. He whispered to his best bowmen to pick their target. The palace guard wore helms and breastplates, so his archers knew to aim for faces, groins, and thighs.
"Ready? Now!"
hissed Clemson. 8 arrows flew, slicing the cold air. 7 connected with solid thuds, but not all put their targets completely down. Men started yelping in pain and fury. Bristles and Darius's swords flashed, and the rest of the queen's shield galloped to their aid. If the palace guard had all had their long halberds at the ready, the horsemen might have fared worse, but some of their wicked hooked pikes leaned against the wall. Metal clashed in wavering torchlight. Darius cut a young guard's throat, and blood spurted in a wide arch. Bristle head-butted Lurgan. With a solid swing of his own sword, Clemson beheaded a young soldier who stood stock still, frozen in shock at an attack from his own comrades. The skirmish lasted only moments, but noise rang out as the palace guard shouted and cursed their attackers. And the princella started screaming, "Mama! Why, Mama, make it stop!" When all of their adversaries lay dead or dying, his men winched up the heavy metal portcullis that barred entry during the nighttime hours.
"Ride, ride!"
Clemson shouted, raising his own bloodied sword into the night. All the queen's shields spurred their horses. Night mist and smoke shot off as if released from years of unjust captivity. They galloped recklessly right through the middle of Cascada. Clemson thought he heard a yell of "Stop them! Stop them!" But nothing could halt their momentum down the sloping avenues. A few arrows flew in their direction, one lucky shot connected with the side of Pontol's thigh. As they rushed headlong through every turn, anything or anybody in their way scattered like affronted chickens. On a winter's night, the city was comparatively quiet, but a number of folks were still out and about. The 2 dozen horses leapt over obstructions and citizens dashed out of harm's way. People screamed. One of the shield's horses slipped, fell heavily and made no effort to rise. Darius circled back and Yaneth, evidently not seriously hurt, leapt up behind him. They clattered at full speed through the courtyard of the star, the fountain pulsing water above them into the black sky. Clemson kept watch on the royals. He knew the princella could ride well, but he marvelled at how smoken she moved as one. He would rather have had the royals surrounded by his soldiers, but no one could catch up with their superior mounts. The queen and princella led the way, their cloaks billowing out behind them, as their horses sped down the hill from the palace, down through the city streets, and down toward the harbour. A dark hat and veil flew off Queen Cressa's head and floated into the air behind her. Hooves clattered on wooden boards as they reached the quay. They pulled up the horses, who balked and skittered at the sudden change of speed, men and beasts panting and looking around. After the stress of the flight, it felt anticlimactic that all was silent and gloomy under the 2 cloudy moons, as it would be this time of night. The only things to see were some stray cats prowling for fish scraps, a limited glow from the hut of the harbour watch, and the dark hulls of sleeping ships, some boasting watchmen dozing over braziers. From up the hill, back toward the palace, came the sound of pursuit.
"There!
shouted the Queen, pointing to a ship berthed a distance to the north. Now Clemson too saw a man standing on the dock waving a lantern. They galloped off in that direction. Though deep-hulled ship stood with its gangway down and its sailors already in motion to loosen her moorings, Clemson recognised the figure with the lantern, the Queen's counsellor, Belcazar. "Get the Princella and your men aboard," Queen Cressa ordered him. A man he assumed was the seamaster appeared on the deck, shouting, 10 horses! We have room for only 10! Clemson dismounted, as did his soldiers. Smoke, with the Princella still astride, trotted right up the gangplank, as if the gelding climbed shaky planks every day. Sina and Pontol led the other horses up. Clemson protectively held on to the Queen's elbow, his hand on his sword hilt. "Belcazar, well done," said Queen Cressa. "Captain, give me a gem." Though his fingers had become thick and clumsy, Clemson fished the leather pouch out. The Queen gave Belcazar a giant gem, the colour indiscernible in this light, that he tried to refuse. "I insist. You may need to leave Cascada and hide for a while." He started to kneel and kiss her hand. The noise of an immense troop grew. It was getting closer to the quay. "Your Majesty," insisted Clemson, tugging her elbow. She gave Belcazar the Queen's blessing as Clemson hustled her up the gangplank. The sailors pulled up the plank and unfurled the sails, using their oars to push off from the dock. The 12 two-person oars on each side of Sea Sprite moved them out into the harbour with practised strokes, while the sails just lay flaccid. Clemson sought to detect wind on his cheeks, but he was too flushed to feel anything. A hunting party of at least 40 soldiers, with more reinforcements streaming down the hill, burst out onto the quay and headed toward the ship like wolves sighting their prey. The horses that had been left behind spooked, milling nervously around in a tight cluster, providing a buffer of chaos that the councillor used to slip away into the shadows of some crates. The sailors pulled on their oars, moving the ship farther out of the harbour's shelter. Then the sails filled and the ship gained speed, headed deeper into the Bay of Cinder. The first mate attended the royals while Shield saw to the horses they had loaded. Captain Clemson looked to his wounded. Pontol's arrow came out of his thigh easily and he staunched the bleeding with pressure. Others had taken slight injury in the melee at the gate, crashed into low-hanging signs or twisted joints. Most just needed a bandage and a word of comfort or reassurance. As the shoreline receded from view and no chase ship put to sea, Clemson puffed out his breath with relief and rolled his knotted neck muscles. "Captain," Kinley interrupted, "you're needed." She led Clemson to where Sergeant Bristle cautiously perched on a keg. Bristle held his hands clamped over his belly, black liquid rapidly seeping around his fingers.
"What's this?" Clemson asked. "Damn you, Kinley, fetch a lantern I can actually see with."
Bristle grunted.
"Cow fucking Lurgan. I sunk my sword into him, but he still managed to stick me right and proper."
Clemson pried away his sergeant's hands to examine the wound as gently as he could, discovering that a blade had gone in its full depth. It hadn't cut a major artery, or Bristle would not have been able to ride, but whatever it had nicked bled steadily. Clemson sucked his breath in through his teeth.
"I know you can do naught for a deep belly wound," said Bristle. "Lost a lad this way in that bread riot. Drought and damnation. We should have been quicker to the gate."
Clemson straightened up and put his hand on Bristle's shoulder.
"How about a drink for the bane?
Never say no to a good drink, but cap, you make a wretched tavern wench."
Clemson sent for the ship's rum. Although Bristle needed the liquor for his pain, no sooner had he drunk it than he vomited it back up. The shields made their companion as comfortable as they could and took turns watching over him. Clemson retired to one of the bunks, but despite his fatigue, whenever he closed his eyes, he saw Gathley, the young Weir soldier at the gate, or Bristle. He was just as glad to give up trying to sleep when Yaneth came to fetch him, telling him that Bristle's condition had worsened. Now he fevered and gasped for breath. Clemson sat by him during his last hour, clasping his longtime comrade's hands tightly. Bristle's agony was fearful to behold.
"Together we saved the royal family,"
Clemson said softly, though Bristle was past talking.
"I couldn't have done it without you, Sergeant. You did your part so stoutly. You will forever live in my heart with honor. Sleep gently on the eternal waters."
Shortly after the sun rose on the Bay of Cinder, Bristle gasped his death rattle. Within a moment, his old friend was gone, replaced by inert flesh.